Well, thank you to Adam and thank you to Andy and the team for leading us in praise. We are in our second week of a series in the life of Joseph. It's a story within the story of the book of Genesis, and some people have called it a novella, a short story about the life of Joseph. And we've entitled this series, Shattered Dreams. Shattered Dreams. And we discovered in our first part of this narrative last week how jealousy and hatred can destroy a family. We saw how Joseph, a young 17-year-old boy, was miraculously shown dreams, perhaps in his mind's eye or in a physical way, we're not quite sure, that in a sense his family would bow down to him. But not only that, in a sense that there would be a greater fulfillment than that many, many people would bow down to Joseph. But unfortunately, the story didn't finish that way last time. Joseph, being the young sort of upstart of a brother, went and sort of boasted about what he had been revealed to by God. He and his father had such a close relationship. In fact, his father loved Joseph more than any of the other sons. He doted on Joseph. He gave Joseph a beautiful multicolored coat. He picked him out as being special and different and more loved than any of the others. But this split the family. And so one day when Joseph went out to check on his brothers, the hatred in the brothers rises to the surface. They see him coming from a distance, and so they plan to kill him. And so they come and they throw him down a pit. And then one of the brothers sort of says, well, let's not leave him here. Let's sell him to some of these Ishmaelites, these Midianite travelers who are coming. Let's make some money out of him, because they were shepherds and they wouldn't have made a lot of money anyway. And so they sold him. And so Joseph last week was in the bottom of a pit. He is now on his way to Egypt as part of a slave gang. But what's happened to his dreams? You can imagine how Joseph might just be feeling. God, what about the dreams? You said that my family were going to bow to me. You said that all these peoples were going to bow down to me. And now here I am being thrown in the pit by my own brothers. And not only that, they wanted to make money out of me. And they have sold me. And I'm on my way to a country I don't know where even I'm going to. God, why? And God, where are you? My life's in a mess. And we identified perhaps a little bit with that last week. And we questioned our own lives when someone walks out of the house that we love, as Adam talked about tonight. When something happens in your life, like Adam talked tonight, something to your health, you have a stroke or illness strikes in your family or with someone in your workplace or a friend that you love. And so you begin to question, God, where are you? You've promised that you would never leave me or forsake me, but it seems like you're no longer here. What has happened? And so we can identify with Joseph, I think, as we meet him in the next part of this narrative. In 1945, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was executed by the Nazis. He was only 39 years of age. Yet in those 39 years, Bonhoeffer had distinguished himself as a pastor and a theologian, as well as a courageous Christian in the member of the resistance against Hitler's Third Reich. He was loved by many back in Germany and wrote a famous book called The Cost of Discipleship, but perhaps one of his best works might be found in a little booklet that he wrote on temptations. And listen to what he said about temptation. In our members, there is a slumbering inclination towards desire which is both sudden and fierce. With irresistible power, desire seizes mastery over our flesh. All at once, a secret smoldering fire is kindled. The flesh burns as in flames. It makes no difference whether it's sexual desire, ambition, vanity, desire for revenge, love or fame or power or greed or money or even the strange desire for the beauty of this world, of nature. At this moment, God becomes quite unreal to us. He loses all reality. And only desire for the creature is real. And then he says this, which is so interesting. Satan does not here fill us with hatred against God when temptation arises, but with forgetfulness of God. Satan does not here fill us with hatred against God, but with forgetfulness of God. the lusts and the temptations that arise up envelops our minds and our wills, and the powers of clear discrimination and decision are taken from us. It is here that everything within us rises up against the Word of God. And so tonight in the next part of the narrative, we're going to meet Joseph, who's going to face temptation, perhaps like he's never felt before. No doubt he's questioned God on this journey. He's going out to help his brothers, thrown down a pit, then thrown on this into the slave gang on his way to Egypt. No doubt he's questioning God, but as we meet him in the next part of this journey, he's about to enter into the jaws of temptation. He's going to face temptation to sin sexually. He's going to face temptation to use his power in the wrong way. He's going to face temptation to give up on God when he even obeys and honors him. But we're going to see something that's going to be like a red line through this passage. The unseen hand of God. That's the title this evening. The unseen hand of God. The book of Genesis is amazing because in Genesis chapter 1 and 2, God is so visible. He's got his hand, so to speak, creating the world. He's got his hand making Adam and Eve. He's got his hand picking out Abraham from Ur of the Chaldeans. He has got his hands all over the start and the middle of Genesis. But at the end of Genesis, in this story within the story of Genesis, it seems as if God is on holiday. It seems as if God is no longer there. God, who had given us dreams, now backs off from the scene and we can't see him any longer. But listen to what a pastor called Tim Keller said about this. With God, silence is not absence. With God, silence is not absence. Hiddenness is not impotence. When God seems the most hidden, often he's working the most for us. But with God, silence is not absence. Hiddenness is not impotence. When God seems the most hidden, often he is working the most for us. And so we're going to see that particularly in the life of Joseph. And maybe tonight, as you identify with Joseph, as we move through this passage, you're going to see God's hand in your life, even though you can't see it visibly at this time. Joseph is on his way to Egypt. As he was led along the Nile Valley, he would have seen the pyramids in their heyday. They were newly built in that period. All around, he would have seen and heard of multiple gods, as well as local deities. He would have heard of the cosmic gods of Ra, the sun god, and Nut, the sky goddess. He would have heard of the cult of Osiris and of the divine Pharaoh himself. He would have come to have a strangely common and pluralistic society where there are so many gods but no knowledge of the true God. Yet it was not Ra who's going to be here in charge of Egypt and Joseph's destiny. It's going to be God, the God of Israel, the Lord of all the ends of the earth. We're going to meet Joseph now. He's been sold into slavery. He's now arrived in Egypt. And you can imagine how he feels in that slave market in Egypt. Perhaps he's bound in chains. You can perhaps feel the dust rising up all around his body and his skin and the clanging of the chains together and the shouting and the bartering and people maybe inspecting his body for fleas to see if he really is a healthy young guy. And that's where we meet him at the beginning of the narrative tonight. So let's see the first thing. The unseen hand when tempted with power. Verse 1 of chapter 39. Look what it says in front of you. Genesis chapter 39, verse 1. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. And he lived in the house of the Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. And Potiphar put him in charge of his household and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. And so what we need to ask ourselves this evening, did it just so happen to be that Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's closest guards was the one that bought Joseph. Did it just so happen, or was it the very fact that God, even though he is unseen, is actually still holding the situation together, even though on the surface it's very tragic and difficult for Joseph? And so even at the beginning of the narrative, the unseen hand of God is still, in a sense, very much working in Joseph's life, and he has moved Potiphar's heart to buy Joseph. It's amazing, Luke, in verses 1 to 6, how many times God is mentioned. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. Verse 3, the Lord was with him. The end of verse 3, the Lord gave him success in everything he did. And so, even though Joseph's life on the surface is so painful and so tragic, the unseen hand and presence of God is holding Joseph together, even in the most difficult of times. Perhaps you feel like that tonight. You can remember days and hours and moments of your life where your situation was so painful and tragic, but there was, in a sense, an unseen power holding you together. The Apostle Paul would write to the church at Philippi and said about the peace that surpasses all understanding. He also said in that chapter that he could do everything through Christ who strengthened him. And he wrote that letter from a prison. And he would record in another letter all the times that he was beaten, flogged, scourged, shipwrecked, on the run, in danger in the river, in dangers in every city. He said that he knows that in every city only persecution and problems and beating await him. But you see, in Joseph's life and in Paul's life, both of them knew that no matter how difficult the circumstances seemed on the outside and how tragic, there was a power of the most holy and high God working in both of their lives, even though on the surface, it seemed like he'd gone on holiday. So verse 4, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. This is amazing. Potiphar knew that God was in Joseph's life. You see, Potiphar, I believe, was a top guy in Egypt. He had made it. He was well-schooled and probably in education. He was well-schooled in a military background. He could spot talent within a couple of minutes. And he saw Joseph, perhaps, even in that slave market. And he knew, even to look at this guy, look into his eyes, that there's something different about this guy. And then he saw Joseph in the workplace. He put Joseph out into the field, out under the hot sun in Egypt, and he saw Joseph's integrity. He saw Joseph's work ethic. He saw Joseph getting along with people. He saw Joseph being blessed by God, and so he brings him into the house. He'd been promoted. Why? Because God was with Joseph. And here's a secular guy in a secular job, in a secular household, and he's looking at Joseph's life and he sees something radically different about this young 20-year-old guy. People are watching us. People are watching you. They're watching me. One old pastor said this: the best advertisement of Christianity is a life of integrity. People read us a great deal more than they read the Bible. Not true about where you're going to be tomorrow morning. They're watching you. They're examining your life. They want to weigh up, is it true what you say about yourself? But how is it that God blesses a secular man, Potiphar, even though he doesn't worship God? His household is being blessed. Well, you see, God gave a promise to Abraham and all his descendants after him in Genesis chapter 12 that anyone who blessed Abraham's seed line would be blessed. And anyone who cursed Abraham's seed line would be cursed. So in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, it says this: the Lord had said to Abraham, leave your country, your people, and your father's household and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And so Abraham's descendants are hanging on by a string. Joseph nearly died last time. And the family and the seed line of Joseph are being kept together by a piece of string. And last week we found out that there would be someone greater than Joseph that would become, who would be called Jesus Christ. And last week one of Joseph's brothers was called Judah. And Judah was the brother last week that decided, let's not let Joseph die in the pit. Let's sell him. Let's make money out of him. And last week we discovered that the unseen hand of God has never been more at work than in that conversation hundreds of years ago. That Judah would say, let's save Joseph. And that at the end of our narrative, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to find out that Joseph would save Judah's life. And ultimately our lives would be saved. Why? Because who would come from Judah's line? Jesus Christ. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah. So we can enter into this narrative in a completely different way. Not only was Joseph's life being kept alive by an unseen God, not only was Judah's life being kept alive by an unseen God, but the Savior of the whole world was being kept alive through the line of Judah because God is at work. And so we are beneficiaries of that tonight, if you know Jesus as your Lord and Savior. So look at verse 6. How would Potiphar react to such a guy like Joseph? So, he left Joseph's care, everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now, Joseph was well built and handsome. Joseph has now immense power. He's immense power. He's now Potiphar's right-hand man. And Potiphar's one of the top guys in Egypt. How will he use his power? Will he use it for God's glory? Will he use it for his own glory? He's tempted with power. And we're going to find as we move through this narrative that Joseph is going to use his power for God's glory and not for his own glory. And we even see that in someone who was greater than Joseph. The Bible tells us about Jesus in Matthew chapter 4. And the Holy Spirit led him out into the wilderness to be tempted by Satan. And Satan comes to him. Satan says, see all these kingdoms of the earth, I can give them to you. I can do tricks for you as well, Jesus. I can do all this stuff for you, Jesus. I can give you the power. And Jesus simply turned them down time after time and said, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Even Jesus, very God of very God, the Son of God, who came down to earth for us this evening, who was tempted with even more power when he came to earth, he knew that that wasn't his plan. He knew that the Father had set a purpose and a plan for him. And even though the temptations were difficult in the wilderness with Satan, even though he went without food for 40 days, even though in his humanity he would have longed for some of the things that Satan offered to him, when the power was offered to Jesus, Jesus said, no. I've only ever come to do the will of my Father who sent me. And so we find Joseph and Jesus turning down power for the greater good of God's glory. But the narrator throws in this little bit at the end of verse 6. Look what it says. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. That's not a throwaway comment. Because in Genesis chapter 29 verse 17, it tells us about Joseph's mother. She was a beautiful woman. It says in Genesis 29:17, Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. And so now Joseph is going to be tempted with sexual sin. Look at verse 7. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. In the Hebrew Bible, this literally means, I want to have sex with you right now. I'm Potiphar's wife. I'm one of the top ladies in Egypt. I have all the power that a woman in my culture and context and climate could have. Joseph, I always get what I want, and I want you. Joseph, I've been watching you. I like you, Joseph. I want you to come to bed with me right now. Because of his build and looks, he was noticed by Potiphar's wife. You can imagine the progression. Just so happening to be in his presence in ever-increasing degrees, giving him long, lingering, inviting looks, dressing to kill around Joseph from the very first thing in the morning, asking him to bring more and more things to her, chatting with him, perhaps progressing to flirtatious conversation, gradually luring Joseph into her trap. And the writer of the Proverbs warns each one of us tonight about such a liaison. Proverbs chapter 7 verse 6 says, "At the window of my house I looked out through the lattice, and I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men a youth who lacked judgment. He was going down the street near her corner, walking in the direction of her house at twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark night set in, and then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent." And here is a woman with crafty intent. And in our culture and climate, all you have to do is turn on your phone, and you have plenty of people with crafty intent on the internet, crying out to you, luring to you to find your satisfaction in people who are not your wife or your spouse, that you're not married, desires that should be kept for within marriage. They're luring you, they're calling out to you day after day to find your satisfaction in those things, which is not the way God designed it. And so while the temptation may have changed in cultures and climates, our hearts still are tempted by these many different things. But look what he says in verse 8. Look what he says. And before we read it together, think how Joseph could have felt. "I'm a young 20-year-old guy. I'm well built. I'm handsome. My family think I'm dead. My father's been mourning for me for many, many days. My brothers and family hate me. Sure, they threw me away and they sold me into slavery. Nobody actually even knows my name here from my previous existence. I can get away with this. Anyway, God, I've been through such a rough time. Surely I can just find these fleeting moments of pleasure. No one will care or no one will notice." He could have thought like that. But look what he says in verse 8. "But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, 'My master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife.'" And then here comes the line. Here comes the line of this particular part of the narrative that we need to just engage our minds in this evening. Look what he says. "How then could I do such a wicked thing?" And he doesn't say against Potiphar. "How could I do such a wicked thing against God?" How amazing that this young man who had been sold into slavery, who had been left for dead by his brothers, whose life was in a sense like a window that had been shot with a BB gun and it was shattered all over the floor, he had such a confidence in God. You see, he had actually tasted something better than power. He had tasted something better than sex outside of marriage. He had tasted a relationship with the true and living God. And there was such a special, unique fellowship with them that when the moments of temptation came in like a flood and temptation had him in his jaws, he was able to run because he knew that loving God and following God and having a relationship with God was so much better. And so you and I tonight, when we're tempted with power and we're tempted with sexual sin, we not only need to run from it, but we need to cultivate such a deep and intimate relationship with God that when, not if, not when the temptation comes, and it will continue to come until the day that God takes us home or he returns for us, when it comes, we know that loving Jesus and being faithful to him is better.
And so Joseph runs. This was no ordinary temptation. Joseph was not a stone. He wasn't an Egyptian mummy. He was a red-blooded young man in his late 20s. It was not one temptation. But she kept coming to him. Joseph was living out this little verse in the Proverbs long before it was even written. Proverbs 9 verse 10 says this: "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And so in that moment when Potiphar comes to him and saying, "Joseph, just sin sexually, it's okay." He knows that God is omnipresent, that he's everywhere in this world. He knows that God is omnipotent, that he's all powerful. And so he knows that in that moment, while no other human may see what's going on, he knows that there is an unseen God who sees everything. And so it was integrity before God that kept him faithful when the temptation came. Oh, that God would give us that in our lives to greater degrees. That when we're left alone, that when we're in that relationship, that we're in that position at work, that we would be living lives of integrity before a God who sees all. He wants our undivided attention. He wants our undivided devotion. And so here is Joseph, so totally in love with God and the gods of sex and power, were not attractive to him at this moment compared to knowing his father. But look at verse 10. She doesn't give up on Joseph. And though, verse 10, she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her, and then note this, or even be with her. One day, unfortunately, Potiphar's wife is still not giving up. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. So she is a scheming woman. Potiphar's wife is so filled with her own self-importance and is used to always getting her own way and to having all the power and wanting her power to be satisfied. She schemes a situation, perhaps where she sends all the servants out of the house, where she can put a liaison together and lure Joseph into her trap. What will Joseph do now? Joseph runs. He runs from the temptation. Paul told a young man called Timothy, many years after this, to do the same things with temptation in his own life. 2 Timothy 2:22. "Flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, pursue faith, pursue love and pursue peace, along with all those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." Maybe tonight in your relationship with God, you need to run from a relationship. You might need to run from the TV and the internet. Because all these things are coming into your life and coming into your heart, and they're blocking your fellowship with God. They're restricting your desire to grow in Him and to walk in Him and to be closer to Him. And so because Joseph wanted an exclusive relationship with God where he served Him and Him only, he says, "I'm going to run from this, because if I stay here, I'm dead in the water." And so Joseph runs, but this woman's still going to have her power come to the fore. In our hours of greatest temptation, we always need to lean on God. Even Jesus had to do that. At his hour of greatest temptation, I believe, was in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he's walking with the disciples and he's telling them how his soul is overwhelmed with grief, even to the point of death. And he says, "Sit here a while and pray that we won't fall into temptation." And so the Bible tells us that it is the temptation was raging in Jesus' life. He literally stumbles and falls because his body is in agony. There's such great temptation being poured onto his life. And in his humanity, he cries out to the Father, "Father, if there's any other way, take this cup from me. And yet not my will be done, but yours."
In Jesus' hours of greatest temptation, he's literally fallen on the floor in the Garden of Gethsemane, asking the Father to help him and to remove the temptation to not follow his will. I wonder what we would be like as Christians if every time we were tempted, we asked God to take the temptation away, to show us where to go, to lead us out of temptation. And here is Joseph, and here is Jesus modeling to us what it means to cling hard to God when the difficulties come. But the hardest temptation comes at the end. You might say, well, I disagree with you. Well, I hope you might see why. Joseph was tempted with power. He's tempted with sexual sin. But then he's tempted to give up. And I think this is the most difficult one. Because in the Bible, in the New Testament, it says that those who honor God, God will honor them. And Joseph does honor God. He flees the temptation. But this woman is going to use some pretty false evidence to try and convict Joseph. So look at verse 13. When tempted to give up. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed, and when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. And she kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him the story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came to make sport of us, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison in the place where the king's prisoners were confined. What is happening to Joseph? Just when you think his life is back on tracks, it's now shattered again. He'd been promoted from the field. He had now been made the personal assistant of one of the top men in Egypt. And now his wife is accusing him of being a rapist. Unfortunately, Potiphar believes his wife over Joseph. But what's intriguing is this. Someone who was accused of this, someone who was a slave, never mind the fact that it was Potiphar's wife and whatever Potiphar said went, should have been immediately killed. In fact, there's a verse in Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 25, that tells us that that person should be executed. But you see, the unseen hand of God is still at work in this story. Immediately, Joseph should have probably have gone and been executed for doing what he was supposed to have done wrong. But Potiphar throws him into prison. Because he's seen God at work in this young man's life. Seen his integrity. Perhaps Potiphar knows his wife and her schemes. But there might be an element of truth in what she's saying. And so Potiphar is caught between his wife and Joseph, and yet he's seen in Joseph a man of God's integrity. But God, more than anything, is at work. He's keeping Joseph alive every time it looks like his light is about to go out, and God just steps in and makes sure that he moves another little piece along the journey, even though on the surface it seems tragic. Look what it says at the end of verse 20. Look where he's thrown. The place where the king's prisoners were confined. This is of vital importance. Because next week we're going to find out where Joseph will go to and how he will influence the king, and he will influence Egypt, and he will influence the whole world. But look how it finishes in verse 20. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. Sounds familiar? He was in Potiphar's house. The Lord granted him wisdom and favor, and Potiphar saw God blessing him. He's now in the prison cell. And the prison warden, who I'm sure wasn't someone you went out for coffee with, he's probably a pretty intense guy. But this prison warden sees in Joseph a man of integrity and someone in whom the Lord is blessing, someone who has this supernatural strength in weakness.
And so verse 22, the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care. Why? Because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in everything he did. I want to challenge you tonight, if you don't know Jesus, you can live this supernatural life. Because these situations that happened in Joseph's life were so tragic. And if he had no one to cling on to, if he had no one to put his hope and his faith and his trust in, I believe he would have capitulated. And in our world, which to me seems like it's going bad to worse, the Bible talks about the fact that the baby that was born in Bethlehem would be called Jesus, which would mean Savior of the world. That his name would be called Emmanuel, God with us. Do you know him tonight? No matter what you've done, no matter how grotesque the sin, no matter how ashamed you would be to share it, Jesus can cleanse it tonight. There's a lovely passage in Romans that says that God demonstrates his own love towards us. And that while we were still sinners in the prison of sin or in the pit of sin, whatever type of sin we were in, while we were still yet sinners, God loved us. And he loves you tonight. He can move in your life in an unseen way, even at a service like this, and give you a completely new start.